Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, and thank you for listening. So much is going on. Local voices are being heard on Black Lives Matter and racial violence, and we also want to bring you some valuable information on the topic of face shields, one of my favorite topics these days, since the coronavirus is not departing anytime soon. Michael B. Edmond, who is Chief Quality Officer and Associate Chief Medical Officer for University of Iowa Healthcare and Professor of Infectious Disease at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine, says that face shields could be the major factor in stopping the pandemic. Wow, I like that. But first, the weather and Dennis Hart with a summary of next week's news in Iowa. Sunny skies today, but showers and thunderstorms are expected tomorrow through Wednesday. Yay, garden! Looking forward to the rain. And then we're expecting sunny skies on into the weekend with temperatures not unpleasant in the high 70s and low 80s. Dennis Hart, what has been happening?
Protests, primary elections, and the coronavirus all made big news around Iowa last week. Last Monday, Governor Kim Reynolds joined city and state leaders at a news conference and described the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis while he was in police custody as an unsettling and criminal act of violence. The president of the Iowa-Nebraska NAACP, Betty Andrews, was also at that news conference. She called for working with government officials on reform and for people to vote for officials who will represent them and combat what she called a legacy of oppression. Then, on Monday night, police used tear gas to clear the Capitol grounds of protesters in Des Moines after authorities had issued several orders to disperse. Several hundred protesters had marched around downtown and the East Village after leaving a peaceful rally held earlier in the evening. On Tuesday night in Des Moines, hundreds of people marched peacefully through the downtown area. Then, on Wednesday night, about 1,000 protesters reached Mayor Frank County's home in Des Moines. County walked outside to meet the crowd. He thanked them for keeping things peaceful and said he had heard their hearts and their pain. Then on Thursday, Polk County supervisors lifted the curfew that had been in place for several days, and that night, hundreds of protesters marched through downtown peacefully. And on Saturday in Des Moines, thousands of Iowans gathered for protests and demonstrations around the metro. In Davenport this past week, the mayor vowed that justice would be served after a night of violence in that city. Two people were killed by gunshot wounds, and two others were wounded by gunfire. Mayor Mike Mattson said first responders had answered 20 shooting calls during one night and reports of three suspicious fires. That violence came after a peaceful march that had occurred in Davenport the day before. Meanwhile, in Iowa City, hundreds of protesters tried to block traffic on Interstate 80 on Wednesday night. They were met by state troopers and Iowa City police. Officers fired tear gas, and the crowd eventually dispersed. Later in the week, the Iowa City mayor said he was not okay with police using the chemical agents. And on this past Saturday night in Iowa City, protesters marched through the city and vandals spray-painted Kinnick Stadium at the University of Iowa, along with a statue of the man the stadium is named for, Niles Kinnick. This, just hours after the football team's strength and conditioning coach, Chris Doyle, had been placed on administrative leave, after dozens of social media posts from black former athletes described a culture of systemic racism within the university's football program, with Doyle specifically mentioned. On the coronavirus front in Iowa last week, the death toll kept going up, and so did the number of people infected with the virus. As of this Monday afternoon, more than 600 state residents had died from the virus, and about 22,000 had been infected, including about 150 in Story County. Today, the governor's office announced that Test Iowa would open five new coronavirus testing sites this week in Dallas, Page, Union, Carroll, and Crawford counties. Meanwhile, Tyson Foods said that 815 workers had tested positive for the virus at two of its meat processing plants in western Iowa. 591 of the workers are employed at Tyson's pork packing plant in Storm Lake, out of the 2,300 workers there. Most of those who had tested positive had no symptoms. That plant had been temporarily closed for sanitizing, and it reopened last Wednesday. Another 224 workers tested positive for the coronavirus at Tyson's beef and pork processing plant in Council Bluffs, where nearly 1,500 people work. Tyson said the Storm Lake and Council Bluffs plants are among 40 across the nation where the company was rolling out advanced testing capabilities. Meanwhile, the Des Moines Register reported that Tyson had reinstated an attendance policy that punishes workers for missing a shift. The head of the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union called that a serious mistake. Also last week, three members of an animal rights group were charged with trespass after chaining themselves to a fence surrounding an Iowa facility where thousands of pigs were euthanized last month. The activists supporting a California animal rights group had targeted Iowa Select Farms, a pork production facility, in a variety of events over the past month, including releasing secretly videotaped footage of Iowa Select workers euthanizing pigs at a Grundy County facility by shutting down ventilation and increasing the heat and humidity. Iowa Select said the action was necessary because of supply chain disruptions caused by the coronavirus. In another story, Governor Reynolds said state officials were working on plans to reopen long-term care facilities for visitation while trying to minimize the risk from the coronavirus. Meanwhile, Iowa State University athletic officials confirmed the department's first positive coronavirus case. It involved a part-time student worker at the athletics department who is being quarantined. In addition, four student athletes in two different sports were also quarantined after showing symptoms of the coronavirus. On the jobless front last week, nearly 7,000 state residents filed first-time unemployment claims. Across the nation, nearly 2 million people filed jobless claims. But on Friday, word came that the nation's unemployment rate had dropped to 13.3% compared to 14.7% in April. Meanwhile, the Iowa Hospital Association released projections showing the state's 118 hospitals could collectively lose more than $2 billion in revenue because of the coronavirus outbreak, and that some rural hospitals will not survive the outbreak. The pandemic changed healthcare's business model, forced the shutdown of elective surgical procedures, and caused many people to avoid seeking healthcare because of the fear of getting the coronavirus. In another story related to the coronavirus, the Pride Fest, scheduled to take place in Des Moines this month, was canceled. Meanwhile, officials at the Iowa State Fair said they will decide by June 15th whether this year's fair will be held. Minnesota and Wisconsin have already canceled their state fairs this year. But the Adventureland Amusement Park in Altoona opened its gates to guests on Wednesday. In election-related news last week, Republican voters in Iowa's 4th Congressional District, which includes Ames, ousted incumbent Steve King in last Tuesday's primary. State Senator Randy Feenstra defeated King with nearly 47% of the vote, compared to King's 36%. Feenstra had the backing of many state-elected officials and national Republican groups. King is a 9-term congressman, having been elected in 2002. He had been stripped of his congressional committee assignments last year after remarks he made to the New York Times about white nationalism. He denied supporting white nationalism and said his comments were taken out of context. Feenstra will now face Democrat J.D. Scholten in November's general election. In other Iowa races last Tuesday, Republican David Young won the Republican nomination for the 3rd congressional district seat in Iowa. He will face incumbent Democrat Cindy Axne in the November general election. Axne defeated Young for that district's congressional seat in 2018. Meanwhile, State Representative Ashley Hinson won the Republican nomination in the 1st congressional district. Hinson will face Democratic incumbent Abby Finkenauer in November. And Democrat Teresa Greenfield won the Democratic U.S. Senate primary election. The Des Moines businesswoman will face Republican incumbent Iowa U.S. Senator Joni Ernst in November. And there was word that Iowa set a new primary election turnout record last week as absentee voting surged in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. More than 410,000 people voted absentee this year. There was also word last week that Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley had put a hold on two of President Trump's high-level nominees until the White House gives him reason why the president fired two federal watchdogs. At the state capitol last week, Iowa lawmakers returned from their more than 2-month break caused by the coronavirus. Over the coming days, they'll work to finish passing several policy bills and put together the state budget. And Republican lawmakers move forward to give businesses and healthcare providers heightened protection from coronavirus-related lawsuits. Meanwhile, Governor Reynolds signed a bill last week that could pave the way toward ending the state's ban on voting by felons. The bill is a precursor to a constitutional amendment that would automatically restore voting rights to felons once they have completed their sentences. Iowa is the only state in the nation with a blanket ban on felon voting. Individuals must apply to the governor for their voting rights to be restored. Also last week, word that Iowa was renewing efforts to move eligible residents from its institutions for people with disabilities to smaller facilities in communities. The Glenwood and Woodward Resource Centers now care for more than 300 adults with intellectual disabilities. Weather also made news last week in Iowa. Thunderstorms rolled through the state on Friday morning, with winds that knocked down enough power lines to leave several thousand people in the Des Moines metro area without electricity. In other news last week, a judge ruled that the Fort Dodge man accused of killing a church pastor is competent to stand trial. 36-year-old Joshua Pendleton is accused of killing the Reverend Alan Henderson of the St. Paul Lutheran Church in Fort Dodge last October. There was also word last week of the death of Johnny Majors, who was head coach of Iowa State University's football team for 4 years, starting in 1968. In 1973, Majors left ISU to become coach at Pittsburgh, where he won a national championship in 1976, then moved on to Tennessee, where as head coach, his teams won 3 SEC championships and 2 Sugar Bowls. Johnny Majors was 85 years old. And one more note from last week, word that Des Moines residents who hope to stop the public school district there from building a $19.5 million football and soccer stadium on the Drake University campus turned in a petition signed by more than 7,000 people asking for a public vote on that plan. But the school district says more signatures were needed. And that is your summary of the week's news from around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart. I'll be back this coming Friday with a look at what happens in Ames this week. Now, don't go away. There's much more ahead, right here on Local Talk.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Tomorrow will be George Floyd's funeral in Houston. Demonstration in support of Black Lives Matter will be held tonight in Boone. Meanwhile, a vigil was held on Main Street in Ames from 3 p.m. on Friday until 3 p.m. last Saturday. Many showed up to be heard and seen with handmade signs standing on the street corner. And so here are some of their voices to share with you. I start the recording with the sound of Reverend Anthony Bowles from Body of Christ Church, who gave a brief cornerside sermon.
There's no shame in where we're at now unless we're going to stay there. And that's the thing. We need to grow from where we are. We don't know what we don't know till we know it. And we're all on a journey of learning. And I'm utterly indebted to my Black brothers and sisters who have patiently and lovingly helped me grow. It's not Black men and women's job to teach white people about these issues. We need to take responsibility for our part. We need to take responsibility for the power structure and the systems that are in place. They're already tired, and we're going to them and saying, teach us what's wrong. That's messed up. So we take responsibility for what we can do and make the difference we can. I saw this today and just wanted to share it with you briefly. It says, if my wife comes to me in obvious pain and asks, do you love me? An answer of, I love everyone, would be truthful, but also hurtful and cruel in the moment. If a coworker comes to me upset and says, my father just died, a response of everyone's parents die would be truthful, but hurtful and cruel in the moment. So when a friend speaks up in a moment of obvious pain and hurt and says, Black Lives Matter, a response of all lives matter is truthful, but it's hurtful and cruel in the moment. Part of what we need to do is feel with each other. And That's what empathy is feeling with each other. And our love is only made real for God if we love our brother and our sister. That's the practice. That's how we make it real. That's how we make it tangible. And so the last thing I wanted to share is another post I saw on Facebook. And it says this: what if 2020 isn't canceled? What if 2020 is the year we've been waiting for? A year so uncomfortable, so painful, so scary, so raw, that it finally forces us to grow. A year that screams so loud, finally awakening us from our ignorant slumber. A year we finally accept the need for change, declare change, work for change, become the change. A year we finally band together instead of pushing each other further apart. 2020 isn't canceled, but rather the most important year of them all yet. We pray that it would be a statement to our community that we're in this together forever. We pray that you would continue to work in hearts and lives. Take us from the place of where we need to grow in our ignorance to a place of the needed change, not only in our community, but in our individual lives.
Pastor Jeremy Bowles, Body of Christ Church.
In Jesus' name, amen.
Could you explain what's going on here?
Well, it's just people are just gathering for peaceful protest. And my boy here is cleaning up. He has his own barbershop here. So for like 3 p.m. today till 3 p.m. tomorrow, free like cuts. People can just come up here and show their support in any way they can. Might be peaceful, might be science, whatever. But it's just like everyone come together and, you know, stand for a cause. So that's what it's all about for 24 hours.
Yep, it started at 3 here on Friday and it goes till 3 tomorrow.
So this is a 24-hour vigil?
Yeah, so we started a poster. It had a 3 p.m. from Friday today till 3 p.m. tomorrow. We're just going to gather and make sure our voices are heard. So
Anthony Helm, who's the owner of Prime Barbershop, kind of like steered this. He just wanted to create a space where people could share about Black Lives Matter and talk about racial justice and racism in our country, in our community.
I'm Anthony Helm, and I own Primetime Barbershop on the corner of Main Street and Kellogg here in Ames, Iowa. So the barbershop's always been where everybody's welcome, so we said if everybody else is closing early and dividing, we're going to come together and stay open 24 hours. So we gave everything away for free, cut for free, food for free, had speakers all night, all throughout the night, and just got together. But we wanted to show people that we could do it lovingly and together, and that's what we did, man. It was awesome.
Did you have a lot of people during the night?
Yeah. We had every corner full in the street dancing. I'll bet we had over 100 people. Yeah, it went all through the night. We started at 3 p.m. yesterday. We had people speaking at 1 in the morning, 3 in the morning, and it'll go till 3 today.
So how do you feel?
I couldn't feel any better about it. Yeah.
I just want to thank everybody for everything they did. We also need to remember that this is going further than even George Floyd. For instance, me, I'm a felon, and because of George Floyd and the protests and the things that people of color are on the front lines doing, I got my rights back. So that's something that, like, it's going way deeper. This is accomplishing a lot more.
Different races coming together, like, having a good time, showing that, like, Black Lives Matter and showing support for us people of color and things, like a safe spot and things like that, where people got to express their feelings. And
do you have something that you could say?
Yeah, I'm feeling like God put us all here together and things like that. He didn't put us as colors. We're all the same. We all got two legs, two arms. And, like, He didn't make us all different. It doesn't matter, like, where we're from and things. We're all together.
And are you in high school? Or?
Yeah, I'm in high school. I'm going into my junior year at Ames High School. My name is Ring Yak. We just got to try to get the word out, show that Black Lives Matter.
I'm just standing here with my Black Lives Matter sign and police reform now.
I can read the sign.
Okay, why don't you read the sign?
Yeah, it says, if you aren't angry, you're not paying attention.
I remember one of the first moments I really thought that the whole, like, Black Lives Matter movement, like, I should be doing something, is when that kid in the hoodie, Trayvon Martin, got shot when he was getting a bag of Skittles. Then my dad, when he heard about that, he said, if we were black, that would have been you. Because I, when I was a high school teenager, I always went down to the, you know, corner store, got a bag of Skittles, and I loved to wear hoodies. So, you know, I did that exact walk a lot of times. Same exact thing that he did. Difference is that I'm white. My dad is right. When I'm older, that would be one of my kids. So, I mean, we need to do something. We need to speak up.
So what does your sign say?
Black Lives Matter.
Are you an Iowa State student?
I just graduated with a bachelor's in biology.
Would you read your sign?
Yes. It shouldn't be a privilege to be alive.
I think that just, like, all we're asking for is for murderers to be put in jail and to be reprimanded, and, like, there shouldn't be any controversy over that. So, yeah, police brutality and recognizing that black people are being murdered by cops. Yes. And, yeah, that's...
Read what your sign says.
Murderers should go to jail, ACAB, and Black Lives Matter.
You see how many young people are here. This is a human rights idea. This is about keeping people alive. So, like, we might be young and people might think down upon us on that, but, like, we're not a silent generation. We're not a quiet generation. We're not a passive generation. So I think in a community like Ames, which is heavily filled with college students, I think it's important to see how many young people are out here. It shows that we're not going to be quiet about this. And this is just the beginning.
Would you read your sign?
Black Lives Matter and stop police brutality.
How many more of us do you want dead? Hashtag Black Lives Matter.
It's really awesome to see how many young people are here. Like, we have high schoolers, we seem to have some middle schoolers, and they are hungry and they're ready for justice, you know, and it breaks my heart that they have to be here, but I know that this is paving the way for future generations in a racially just society to grow up in.
You know what? Honestly, I hope this is it. Honestly, I just hope this is the last of it. And I've been to multiple protests, and the only thing that goes through my head is how many more of us is it going to take for everyone just to be seen as just one. We're just all together and we're just a big one big happy family. Like, how many more of us do you want dead until you see that, if you ever do see that, you know? Because we're tired of it. But if it's not, then we'll keep fighting, and we're gonna keep fighting for the injustice that's in this state and this city and this world and this country until it's gone.
I think we should all just really love each other, you know, experience a new life, you know, experience a new culture, educate yourself. That's really important. We're not making up stories. Like, this is real. Like, racism is real. Discrimination is real. And, you know, people just getting violated by their rights and not even treated like they're human. That's what angers me a lot. Why can't we just treat each other like human beings? Don't see us as color, but see us as human beings, living, breathing humans.
Would you read your sign?
Yes, it's Black Lives Matters, and I have hashtag proud, hashtag talented, hashtag gifted, hashtag BLM, and hashtag young. My parents, my grandparents, they fought before me, and I think it's my right to fight for the future too. I want to get a better future for people so they can stop the killing, yeah.
So you're a college student?
Yes, I'm a college student. I'm a senior.
Do either of you have something you'd like to say?
Who are you?
I am with KHOI Community Radio down
okay.
the street.
Good.
Silence is consent. Use your voice, and Black Lives Matter. This sign's important to me because being here, showing people that if you don't at least do the minimum, I mean, if you're complacent, that you're part of the problem. I don't know. I'm just glad to see everybody here.
We are all God's children. Love one another. Wanting the next step to happen soon.
My sign says, until the color of your skin is a target, you will never understand the circumstances.
Can you say a little bit about what's behind it?
So basically, I'm trying to say that being black, some of us are scared to go outside of our houses and walk and just, like, be normal, and we don't have that.
Do you feel that way?
Sometimes. You won't understand it if you're not our skin color. Yeah.
Are you in high school or college?
Yeah, I'm a high school. I'm about to be a senior.
All right, first of all, silence is complicity, especially white silence, because as a white person, I have a lot of privilege. I'm scared of cops, of course. I've always been. But I'm much more lucky because I don't have to worry about just driving in my car, when I get a car, of course, and being worried about pulled over. And
arrested for no reason. I don't have to worry about walking in the streets by myself. I don't have to worry about a lot of things that my black friends have to worry about. We need system reform. Police are put in a place of power. They're using that power in a bad way. Police brutality is very present, and police are fighting protesters who are complaining about police brutality with more police brutality and arresting people for using their free speech. I fear for my black friends every day because this world is really messed up.
Your sign says white people do something.
Yeah. I challenge anybody who feels a defensive reaction in their gut when they see news of protesters. I ask them to challenge that. Take this moment to recognize your defensiveness, challenge it, and then learn.
Your sign says white people do something.
Right.
What would you see people doing?
Seeking out people who have been working on this for a while. Create a new structure that is going to actually care for the citizens of America the way that I think we should be caring for each other. I would have people look into that. So
look into organized efforts to really make change happen?
Yeah. And then donating money, sending letters, especially sending letters to local officials.
Which one do you focus on?
That 8 can't wait. Something that's easy, it's easily implemented. We don't have to wait for laws to be passed or anything. It's something that you can ask your mayor right now if they've signed.
8 can't wait.
8 can't wait. Yes, it's 8 ways that communities can immediately implement with their police force to make sure that there's less violence. And it's proven to decrease violence quite a bit. And you can find out whether your city's mayor has signed on to it, and it's something they can implement immediately, right, without any laws being passed, such as things like no chokeholds and training for de-escalation and things like that. So, yeah.
Would you read your sign?
Yeah. It says, hate does not make America great. I'm here because I support this movement. I think it's really important for people to educate themselves. People can be racist towards me, but it's not as bad as being black. In some cities, it is bad being a Latina, but for me here in Iowa, it's not as bad. Even though I am a minority, I don't fully understand what it is like to be black, and I acknowledge that, and I think it's important that other people acknowledge that.
And that was not the sound of somebody's alarm going off. Honking cars was part of the 24-hour vigil that was held for Black Lives Matter here in Ames in downtown Main Street over the weekend. Tonight, Boone County residents will hold a march in support of Black Lives Matter. Sam Bass is an organizer, and he's here with us. Sam, what is your intention with this march tonight?
Our intention was to basically come together in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement and also to uplift some of the Black members of our community. A response we've seen when we have started exploring this event was, do it in a town that actually has minorities, quote unquote. So a big part of this was to show that our town, though predominantly white, isn't all white, and also that change and activism can happen in any town, no matter how big. We really wanted to come together with that solidarity and that message in a way that made sense for Boone. And so we were exploring what would that look like. And so we're going to do the march, and then we're also going to have a moment with speakers who are Black members of our community, and they're going to be talking about their experiences and the message that they want to get out to the Boone community.
What time will the rally be?
It's going to start at 6 p.m. in the green space, which is downtown Boone at 8th and Story. We may have some extra supplies for those who can't make signs before they get there. And then probably be done around 8. The march is about a mile in a circle, and then we end up back at the green space. So if somebody can't make it right at the beginning, they also are free to join us back at the green space. It's supposed to be a little warm, so make sure that you have hydration. The Boone Movie Theater is being amazing and offering their space. So if people need to cool down or use the restroom, they might even be giving out popcorn, I think. Yeah, so that's going to be fun. So we're very grateful to some of the businesses that are being so helpful with that. Bring a mask. That's second nature now. I forgot to mention that. for sure, bring a mask.
So you'll be trying to social distance?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a big priority for us. Green space is pretty spacious. Accessibility and safety were a huge part of our planning for this. And so COVID-19 has been, you know, in the background of our thoughts during every step.
Have you gotten any pushback about this rally?
Yeah. When the idea was first posed, you know, there we had the, you know, do it in a town that's more diverse, or there's been a lot of pushback about starting something here or like inviting trouble, kind of, you know, they're like, you can't guarantee that it's going to be peaceful, you know. So there's a lot of anxiety, I think, with some members of our community about escalations that could happen. A few businesses actually did board up because they thought it was going to be on Saturday. So I think there's some kind of anxiety about that. And that's been the main source of our pushback, along with, you know, some messages of like, all lives matter, so why are you doing this kind of kind of stuff. But the biggest pushback has been regarding, don't you care about local businesses and those kinds of things.
So do you care about local businesses?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Oh my gosh. Like I mentioned, Boom Movie Theater is opening up their doors for us. El Valle is a Mexican grocer, and they are, I think they're offering water for us. I think Boone Vision Center might be offering water, and the businesses have also kind of come to our aid as well. And I've been looking for ways during COVID to see how to support our businesses more. And so this has just amplified the need more than ever to support local businesses, discouraging or encouraging moments like this.
Is this rally being organized by an organization, or are you individuals?
We're individuals. And my main role was just to pose a question to our Boone Facebook page and say, is this something people would even want? And I was hoping that, you know, it'd be a coalition building thing, and it did become that. And so it's primarily three people, Asia Lyons and Megan Poole. They are awesome. They've been really the ones who have set the groundwork for what's going to go on tonight, creating the materials for, you know, letting people know when and where. It started off as just like a small little triad trying to plan something, but then people are coming forward with their talents in other ways. We have somebody who does graphic design and has asked if people wanted different Black Lives Matter apparel, and she can make it, and then she would donate all of the proceeds for that to a Black Lives Matter organization. So there's a lot of folks coming forward beyond just the planning.
What is your personal message from your heart? What brought you to doing this, going against the grain a little bit?
Black Lives Matter. Nobody can be free until we're all free. That kind of connectedness of the human spirit, and recognizing that, like, yes, the quote unquote all lives matter, but that Black lives have to matter just as much before that can be a true statement. And that justice doesn't really wait around. It doesn't care how big your town is. You need to get out there and demand it and say, this is what it looks like, and that I stand in solidarity with the people who need it most. And then also making sure that you pass off the microphone. For me, it was really important that I just said, hey, anybody want to do this? Because I hadn't seen that yet. And then especially after we've had some awesome Black members of our community step forward, I wanted to make sure that I'm there as needed, but the microphone is in their hands. It's their words.
The speakers will be at 6 p.m.?
I think they're going first. That's something that I think we're going to play by ear, but we might be marching first. The event starts at 6 p.m. in the Green Space, which is at 8th and Story in downtown Boone.
Thank you so much for joining us, Sam Bass. Sam Bass is a resident of Boone, right?
Yes, yes. Oh, that was some people were concerned that we were outsiders, and so they thought we were outside agitators. So that was good to clarify that we are, in fact, members of this community.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Oh, my God.
You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. That is the sound of New Zealand protesters performing a haka dance in solidarity with Black Lives Matter movement here in the United States. You may be aware of haka dancing, but I was not. So when I came across this, I was amazed in the best way possible. What, unfortunately, you don't see on the radio are foot stamping, tongue protrusions, bulging stares, and rhythmic body slapping to accompany the loud chant. Really, really amazing sight. Haka is a type of ancient New Zealand Maori dance to fiercely display a tribe's pride, strength, and unity. I think I need one of those at every one of my birthday parties from now on. So, circling back to COVID-19 news, I've been thinking a lot about face shields, as this is the pandemic and it's wearing on, and life has its complications, its demands. I spoke recently with Michael B. Edmond, Chief Quality Officer and Associate Chief Medical Officer for the University of Iowa Healthcare, and Clinical Professor of Infectious Disease at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. He's also at the hospital there. I asked Dr. Edmond whether face shields could be helpful. Here's Dr. Edmond.
I do believe that face shields have an important role to reduce transmission of this virus. They have quite a number of advantages over face masks. We very successfully implemented face shields in the hospital with our hospital employees at the University of Iowa. And that was what started us to think about, is this an intervention that we can take beyond the hospital and out into the community?
Why was that initially introduced in the hospital?
When the COVID outbreak started, we very critically looked at our inventory of all the supplies that you would need to care for these patients. And one of the items that we were most concerned about in terms of our inventory at the time was our medical-grade face masks. Although we had a large volume of masks on hand, we didn't know how long the outbreak would last. We didn't know what the intensity of the outbreak would be, how many patients we would have to care for at any given time. Now, the reason that all of this became a problem is because most of the personal protective equipment that we use in the hospital are made in China. And when the outbreak started in China, many of the factories there that made these devices closed down. And so the supply chain became disrupted, and hospitals in the United States were having great difficulty getting supplies of personal protective equipment. So when we first started, we did not know whether we would have enough face masks to last us for an outbreak, let's say, that might last for 3 months or even longer. And so we started to think about what alternatives we might have to face masks, primarily for caring for patients that didn't have COVID. So for COVID patients, we would certainly use the face masks that we had. But what about all the other patients that are in the hospital? And should we start to have some kind of protection for our employees, for those patients as well? And so that's where we turn to face shields. Now, the interesting thing is that at the time we tried to order face shields, all the face shields that are marketed for medical uses, those were also in short supply, too, so we couldn't get them either. And then kind of serendipitously, we had a pharmacist who went to a local hardware store and said, hey, there's all these face shields in the hardware store. They're used by people, for example, who do metal grinding or woodwork. There's lots of applications for face shields in agriculture and in other industries. And so what we quickly learned is that the supply chain for these non-medical face shields wasn't disrupted, and they were available, and we were able to source them. And over about a 2 to 3 week period, we were able to get every employee in our hospital, which is somewhere more than 13,000 employees, into face shields. And these include our employees that see patients as well as employees that don't work in a patient-facing role. But we felt that everybody in the hospital should have access and should wear them. So we were able to successfully deploy them using vendors that typically supply face shields outside of the medical setting.
Can you describe what this face shield looks like?
Well, all face shields are fairly simple devices. There is a clear plastic part of the shield that covers your face, and then there's some type of headpiece that clear plastic is attached to. Industrial shields have sometimes a rim around the entire clear plastic that holds it in place. There's a headpiece that's adjustable to your head so that you can get a good fit to it.
So it's basically a clear piece of plastic that covers the front and sides of your face. Is that essentially what it is?
That's exactly what it is.
And it goes from the top of your head to below your chin, or how tall is it?
I get a lot of questions about face shields saying, well, what should I look for if I want to buy a face shield? You want the clear plastic part of the face shield in the front to come to the level of your chin or somewhat below that. And on the sides, it should come back to about where your ear starts. And then at the top, you just don't want it open at the top so that droplets could come over the edge of the shield down onto your face. So it needs to be closed at the top. And that's really all you need to look for.
And that works, whether you get it in a hardware store or from a medical supply store. It's basically works.
Or you can even make it yourself. You could go to a craft store or an office supply store, and you could find what you need to make one of these. Because basically, you could take, for example, a clear plastic page protector, attach that to a piece of foam rubber, which is a headband, attached to a piece of elastic that goes around your head, and you've made your own face shield. So they're very simple. And the great thing about them is that either by making it yourself or ordering them, and there are now many, many companies that are making them, they're pretty accessible. Interestingly, some very large companies have retrofit production lines to make them. For example, Apple and General Motors and John Deere, these big companies are able to manufacture large numbers of these shields. And then there's also smaller companies that have decided to do this. I'm aware of one company that works in theatrical production business. They've started to make face shields. And then there's another company that makes menus for restaurants, the plastic type menus. They're producing face shields. So they're pretty easy to get. And then the real advantage of the face shield over a face mask is their reusability. The medical-grade face masks, they're made of a papery, fibery type of material. They're designed to be worn once and thrown away. So one patient encounter, you throw it away. All hospitals have extended the use of those masks because they're still in relative short supply. We can't just use it once and throw it away. But really, to get more than a day or so's wear out of a medical-grade face mask is about as much as you're going to get, because they're going to tear, they get wet, they stop filtering. So the beauty of the face shield is that it's basically reusable indefinitely. You know, all you got to do is clean it off. You can use soap and water. You can use any kind of household disinfectant spray that you have. You can wipe it off and continue to use it over and over.
Wearing a face shield would definitely make you stand out in public right now.
Right.
But on the other hand, you kind of no longer look like a bandit with your face covered up, too.
Yeah, correct. It's interesting. You know, I've become very used to seeing people in face shields because I work in a building where every single human has a face shield on. So you'll adjust once you see enough people. Interestingly, this weekend I went to the grocery store and I saw 5 people in the grocery store that had on face shields. And some of the grocery stores here in Iowa City actually sell them. So I think as time passes, you're going to see more and more people. And especially there's, at least on social media, there is a fairly aggressive marketing that's occurring to sell face shields by multiple companies. So I think you'll see more and more of them over time, mm-hmm. and people won't notice it anymore.
Well, one of the things about the face mask that has been difficult, I think, for everybody is that it does cover your face up. And so people don't know how to smile at each other. They don't know how to indicate friendliness. Do you find that with the face shield that people are able to relate better again because they can actually see each other?
I think a true advantage of the face shield is you can see people's facial expressions. The other thing is you can see people's lips movement, which helps with speech perception. I've heard from people who are hearing impaired, and they are very concerned about people wearing face masks because it makes it harder for them to have speech perception. So it helps them because they're still able to see persons moving.
Working with children, it would help.
Yeah, that's true. And some of them are scared when they see somebody in a mask. It does help with kids. Interestingly, there's also now face shields that are marketed for children. And so they look like animal faces. They have features painted onto the shield of all different kinds of things, different animals, different characters, to try to make it easier for kids to wear them.
Wow. And how is the sound with a face shield? Does it block the sound when people talk?
Can I hear you if you have a shield on?
Right, yeah. If you have a shield on, can people hear you talk?
Oh, There is a little bit, I think, muffling of the voice. Not as much as you would have with a face mask.
Oh, so it's less than a face mask.
Yes.
Huh. So that's an advantage.
Yes, and part of it, though, is you can also see that person's lips moving. So
right.
There's also that which helps.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had ridiculous conversations in stores where neither of us could understand each other from behind all the various things.
Yeah.
Oh, it's embarrassing. Sometimes you can't hear each other. So, okay. Well, thank you so much. That's very, very interesting. It could be an improvement as time goes on, these new problems, that this could actually help make things better.
Right. Yeah, and you know, the one thing that we didn't talk about, which is also an advantage to the face shield, is that it protects your eyes. We know with this particular virus that one of the ways it can get into the body and establish infection is through the eyes. And so if you're just wearing a mask, your eyes are still unprotected from droplets of an infected person. So the face shield gives you the eye protection in addition to the nose and the mouth. So those are the three places where the virus enters the body.
The mask tends to make you touch your face because you're adjusting the mask.
It's interesting. I had a face mask on yesterday, and I kept realizing how itchy it was on my face, and I kept wanting to touch it. The beauty of the face shield is it doesn't allow you to touch your face. You know, your face itches, and you go to scratch it, and you realize, oh, there's a piece of plastic between me and my hand. So that's a true advantage.
So the face is really blocked off in a very kind of concrete way.
Yes. I think most of us who work in infectious diseases and epidemiology would favor more use of face coverings of some type so that we can really try to get this under control.
You're speaking from the vantage point of a doctor, and but you're also a member of the community, and obviously you're aware that economically this is creating a terrible hardship for a lot of people.
Sure.
Is there any way that you, from the medical standpoint, can find some way to help accommodate?
There's responsible ways to do everything, right? Maybe it's rules about how many people are allowed in a store at any given time and what personal protective equipment each person in the store is going to have on when they're in there. I think that we can come up with ways to make everyday life safer and allow some sense of normalcy. I think the easiest answer to that is if every person had a face shield on when they walked outside of their house every day, that would be one easy thing that we could do. And that would reduce transmission. Maybe even to the point that the outbreak would stop.
Wow, really?
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
You're
really
welcome.
Really appreciate your time. Take care.
Okay. We'll see you.
Yeah, thanks for your work. Bye-bye. It's Michael B. Edmond. He's Chief Quality Officer and Associate Chief Medical Officer for University of Iowa Healthcare and Clinical Professor of Infectious Diseases at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. I should really say Dr. Michael B. Edmond. We'll be sharing more from him later during the week. He had lots more to say about the pandemic. But for now, let's finish off the hour with kind heart-to-heart words from Miss Anna Banana Bread. Anna, you there?
Yep, it's Anna Banana Bread with messages from the heart for you. So today's local show, our local talk show, included young people's voices at protests who read their signs and spoke about how they wanted to make a difference, to contribute to the conversation and actions that make a difference, to challenge and to change the mindsets of others. And then you also had Sam Bass, who wanted to host a protest in a place different than what was expected, changing thinking about where we stand for justice, love, and connection, and again, changing that mind. Message is, goes with that same theme, and it's from Michelle Streeter-Ferrari. What a great name, right? Michelle Streeter-Ferrari, and her daughter, Fiona, wrote this poem as part of her final project as a high school student quarantined at home. So what I'm going to do, this poem is so incredibly clever. I'm going to read it all the way down, and then I'm going to read it all the way back up. So this is Fiona's poem. 2020 is worthless, and I refuse to believe that we are okay. I realize that this may be a shock, but this is saving lives is a lie. quarantining isn't saving people. In 30 years, I will tell my children that I have a life. I tell you this, we will always help each other. This will not be true in my era. We are alone. People tell me this will never be fixed. I do not conclude that we will have a cure. In the future, things will be as bad as it is now. No longer can it be said that we are fine. It will be evident that we aren't all heroes. It is foolish to presume that we are in this together. So that's reading it down. And now I'm going to read it from the bottom up. We are in this together. It is foolish to presume that we aren't all heroes. It will be evident that we are fine. No longer can it be said that things will be as bad as it is now. In the future, we will have a cure. I do not conclude that this will never be fixed. People tell me we are alone. This will not be true in my era. We always will help each other. I tell you this, a life is more important than economy. I have my priorities straight because in 30 years, I will tell my children that quarantining isn't saving people is a lie. This is saving lives. I realize this may be a shock, but we are okay. And I refuse to believe that 2020 is worthless. So thank you, Flora, for this poem that tells us that mindset is everything in 2020. Just as the poem that was read by the pastor earlier in today's local talk. So can't wait for, actually Flora will be joining me on Tuesday, June 16th on the Heart to Heart Messages show. So I'm still searching for that perfect song to match her all the way down and all the way back up home. So if you have any suggestions, let me know. So the pastor this morning stole the poem that I was going to read, so I'll skip over that because it was so great. I love that 2020 isn't canceled, but rather the most important year of them all. So I visited the Today Show website and learned that this was written by a woman named Leslie Dwight, an aspiring writer who said that she was 13 years old when she learned that her father, who passed away when she was just a newborn, had actually died by suicide. And this tragic revelation taught her the importance of staying resilient during the trying times. So you have a lot of young people in today's show that are helping us have hope. And then I'll end with the final heart-to-heart message, which is from a shy friend who didn't want to be named, but she wanted to share this quote with you that she found. Do not be dismayed by the brokenness of the world. All things break and all things can be mended. Not with time, as I say, but with intention. So go. Love intentionally, extravagantly, unconditionally. The broken world waits in darkness for the light that is you. And that's by L.R. Nost. So thank you to Michelle Streeter Ferrari, Fiona, the pastor, and you, my dear anonymous contributor, for our heart-to-heart messages today. If you would like to respond to any of these messages or have a song that you would like to match to Fiona's poem, give me a text at 515-809-0077, or you can email me at khoyradio@gmail.com and put heart to heart in the subject line. So thank you for listening to these individual heart to heart messages that connect us to a community of love, care, and support that is KHOY, the heart of Iowa, which is you and me. And until next time, sending you out with a heartfelt wish for days filled with inspiration and encouragement.
Thank you, Anna. And you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg. And thank you, Anna, for your usual messages from the heart. And thank you for listening to us. Local Talk was engineered by Mike Murphy. And Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. here at KHOI at 89.1 FM. You can hear a recording of this show later online at khoifm.org. with links to guests and information you heard during the program. Also remember that KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Chelly. You also heard New Zealand protesters performing a haka dance in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. And remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And we'll see you again on the radio. Dear listener, we are in need of funds to continue broadcasting. In order to keep everyone safe, we were unable to proceed with spring fundraising plans. Furthermore, local businesses that underwrite KHOI have had to reduce their underwriting budgets. And so, we must enlist your help to keep KHOI's unique services on the air. If you can, please be generous. Please consider giving $150. We would be ever so grateful for whatever you can provide. For a fast and easy way to donate to KHOI, go to khoifm.org and use the yellow donate button. Again, that's khoifm.org, and use the yellow button that says Become a Member Donor. Thank you. All of us at KHOI hope that you and yours are staying well. Thank you for listening. Sincerely, your KHOI family.